As I'm hearing y'all talk about like things that y'all would do for traditions, it's making me think about like Halloween, the camping, right? You talked about camping earlier.
I was like, traditions.
Sorry, earlier.
I immediately heard like the leap was there.
Gotcha.
Sorry, it was earlier when you were talking about like camping and what you do. I guess I'm curious to have a conversation about the role of like just traditions in general of how that, like, how that's part of your life now, right? Obviously, you get to make your own decisions as adults. Mm-hmm. But when we were younger, we would have to be a part of it, right? And I guess I'm leaning on some of the research, right, that I've read over the years of how traditions can be protective factors for mental health. Mm-hmm. And I think we could have, like, kind of a lighthearted conversation about this, and it might go heavy-hearted, but I guess I'm curious about it. Right? What traditions do you currently do that you maybe have carried on from your family of origin? What traditions do you want to stop? What traditions do you want to start with your own family being your unit now or the unit in the future? So I'm seeing the wheels turn, and who shall go first, I wonder.
Yeah. I don't know. I guess when I was first thinking about all the traditions that we have, I was thinking about how, like you were saying, like the ones we keep and the ones we don't keep. I think tradition meant something different to me when I was young because I didn't think about it like something I could or could not keep in the future. It felt like a permanent thing.
There was no choice.
And it felt like that. But it didn't feel like oppressive in that way that like maybe I can feel about it some ways now. It just felt like it was what it was. These are the things that we do, and this is the way that we do it. And I think in some ways it's really nice because it creates structure, right? Having like that thing to lean on, that thing that's just us, and to have like things that we can look forward to, things that we build toward, or like that bring us all together and like that we can look forward to. That's a great thing. And I think especially in a family, when you feel conflict, it can be nice to be on the same page about something. And sometimes I felt like in a lot of ways when I had those moments that tradition was a great way for that to show up. And it usually came out in ways of culture and like the way that we like take care of our farm, take care of each other, the familial relationships that we have and the traditional way that we kind of went about those. And when I went away and I became an adult, I think in a lot of ways I have kept a lot of those and I want to, but I liked the process of being able to make the choice and to be able to kind of evaluate. And I think learning about other people's traditions kind of showed me how traditions teach you about your family, like in your parents, because it shows the values, because there's things that they also let go of before we got them. So when you connect with everybody on like a grander scale, you can kind of see more of who your unit is as a whole, and then see the individuality in it as we break down to what people kept, what people didn't keep, what I want to keep. And most of it has to do with I think just the level of choice and connection. Like I want it to be, I guess not everything can be positive, but I want them to be meaningful, and I want it to be something that like is respectful. So when I think about the traditions of my family that I want to keep, I want to do those things, but in a way that allows everybody to also like, it's okay if you don't do that. Like if that's not what we want to do as a group right now, then that's okay. That can just be mine. Mm. Tradition doesn't have to be the all, the whole we can have some we's and we can have some just mines, and that's okay. And I think that allows us to view tradition in a more fluid way that is more meaningful to what I think they're for. They're for creation, and they're for knowledge, and they're for stability and for strength, and to like give you an outline of something. Like this is the outline of what we've done, but that's not, you know, not every house is built just like this.
Yeah, as I'm hearing you kind of give your thoughts about it, like traditions of the past that have helped even in times of conflict, traditions now of being able to choose. I'm hearing this kind of this piece that I've heard when I've worked with couples about which ones do we get and how do we enforce that? Because I hear you say the ideal of like, I can do mine and doesn't have to be a we. And then comes kiddos in some relationships. And that's like an interesting conversation I often participate in with them, and it's not a like a essential conversation, but it is one of helping these individuals kind of decide their identity.
Well, yeah, because there's your own identity, but there's your identity as a couple and a family, and you kind of have to be on the same page about that. So you got to talk about it.
Yeah. What's going on with you, Rachel, as you're nodding your head? I'm curious.
Well, I'm just thinking about, like, my family and how, like, we don't have a ton of, I wouldn't say that we have a ton of, like, holiday, like, when I think of traditions, I think of, like, holiday traditions or, like, ways you guys celebrate things. And, like, my family doesn't really do that. And so, like, my thoughts were along a similar line, Keona, about, like, family relationships and, like, values and almost, like, coming down to, like, attachment in a way. Like, we have traditions in our familial relationships, like you're saying, and just how, like, just like reflecting on, like, where those traditions, like, where they've taken me in life, how they've, like, impacted my development, my growth, my perspectives, and how a lot of them have been really helpful for me. Like family as a value and prioritizing those relationships and wanting to feel connected to each other. And then there's some that, like, haven't been as helpful that, that, like, I guess in adulthood, right? Like, we want to unlearn some things,
mm-hmm.
replace it with some things that are better. I like to talk to my clients about, because I work with a lot of folks who are kind of, like, in a faith transition of sorts.
Mm-hmm.
They're going through their own traditions, mm-hmm. and we call it the values closet.
Mm-hmm.
You're like, you got to go through your closet every now and then, figure out, like, what clothes still fit. Some were hand-me-downs. Some we need to, like, get rid of. Some we might need to make some alterations to, but, like, that's how we can often look at a lot of our values. A lot of them are hand-me-downs, and some of them don't fit anymore, and some we need to alter a little bit.
I gotta tell you, I'm really loving that analogy right now. Like, very, I just want you to know how deeply that impacted me.
Thank you very much.
Because those kinds of things are actually what I need to be able to process those kinds of things, because I have a really difficult time addressing emotion as what it is. And so being able to, like, have a picture makes it feel more comfortable to address. And I think it was cool for me to have so many things happen while you walked me through that. That was cool.
Oh, well, I'm glad that you were able to, like, because I do think having that visual can be really helpful.
Or, like, how it fits inside with tradition. Like,
you want us to pause? Okay.
Like you know how sometimes you have a piece of clothes and you're like, I stole this from my sister, mm-hmm. or I got this from a friend after a crazy party. I inherited this because of some, like, terrifying event and, like, whatever happened. And I think about, like, some of the interesting things that I learn when I review traditions we have, like a goofy one that we have at my place. Somehow we ended up getting a tradition of surprises, like, being a really big deal. Mm. So when we come home, especially, like, when we come home from school, our favorite thing was to try to surprise everyone as much as possible. And one of the biggest challenges in that was surprising mom, because mom has to know everything, because we have to coordinate with her for everything, or we need her to pay for it, or whatever it is. And so when we could successfully surprise her, it was a meaningful way to show her that, like, you're just as important for this. Like, you should also be surprised, not just a part of the surprise. And now, without meaning to, when any of us come home and we haven't planned to come home, we try to be as secret about it as possible. And it's such a goofy thing that we do now.
No, that's so fun. Yeah. But yeah, so it was just, like, interesting for me to, like, go into my head for a second. I kind of zoned out, I'll be honest. Sorry. And just, like, reflect on that for a second and, like, be in my feels with, like, my family for a minute.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, what it does, right, like, it does exactly what you're saying. When we are in tradition, we think about how these moments that we're doing have been done in relation to others. That's just the truth of it, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's like Halloween comes around and you think of the people that you went trick-or-treating with last year. You think about the costumes. You think about the ways that you scared each other. And so I think that's one of the things that that is such a beautiful part about tradition, because it's a reminder of relationship. Mm-hmm. And I don't think it's a bad thing that you zoned out with that, and that with what you were saying, Kiona, about like it becoming an unintentional thing. I think that's so natural. But I think that's why it's so important to talk about traditions, because we may be unintentionally doing things out of tradition because we haven't addressed it.
Well, it's what's comfortable. It's what's familiar, right? Even if it's not working for us, even if it's not healthy, it's what is known. And that is sometimes safer than what is not known.
And that's why I thought the closet analogy was so impactful for me, because I'm thinking about, you know, like with women and the way they talk about weight, like that thing you keep that you can't fit, but you want to fit.
Yeah.
That's what I thought. That's like the first thing I thought about when you brought up the closet analogy, is that one piece of clothing you keep because you really want to fit it. But are you going to fit it? Like after, like I just cleaned out my closet because I'm moving, and I finally let go of something I held on for like 5 years because I really loved it. I loved it when I could fit it. And I didn't want to let it go, but I don't want to take it with me. Like I just recognize that it's probably not going to change, and I don't see it happening anytime soon. So I was like, if I really love it, I'll find it again. I'll find something like that again or something like it. And I let it go. But in the analogy of tradition, sometimes we really want to do what the family is doing. We want it really bad, but it's just not going to fit me.
And I'm wondering, like, what is the cost of holding on to that piece of clothing that's not going to fit you? Like, that comes at a cost. Every time you open the closet, you look at that, and there are self-critical thoughts. Mm-hmm. There are unkind, bullying thoughts. And I think a lot of times that can happen with traditions, mm-hmm, or with like family values that we hold on to. And every time we open that closet, it is painful. Mm-hmm. But it's safe because we know it. Mm-hmm. It's always there.
I mean, if we open the closet, let's be honest.
Yeah.
If we open the closet. Say more.
No, I just think there are traditions of silence. Right?
Yeah. I mean, how many times do you hear people talk about, like, my family, we don't talk about emotions. We don't talk about stuff.
Right.
We just pretend it doesn't happen.
Or everybody knows who's the dysfunctional person,
right,
in the family that gets excused, but no one talks about it. Right? It kind of bothers me in so many ways. Like I've heard this in so many different communities. They're like, oh, that's the one. And this is not pertaining to only uncles, but this is the thought, right?
Sure.
Oh, that's the uncle that we stay away from. Mm-hmm. Right? I mean, not to be like, we don't talk about Bruno, but like, it's kind of like that, right?
It's not
like,
really.
We just don't. But then those who don't understand the context are like puzzled and like, mm-hmm, what safety do I have now? Do I like not ever say hello? Do I not ever, like, what is that? And then silence becomes a lonely part of that process, because mm-hmm, there are others who want to confront that, mm-hmm, but we're not, because we don't even know what questions to ask, I think, in some ways. And for some, it's like, if they're being silent about it, we're just going to let it be a silent thing.
Do you want to go? I just think something with silence too that can be hard is sometimes silence feels complicit, at least sometimes that's how I feel. And so I think, especially when it's like we're being silent about something that maybe we need to deal, like handle, it can just be so hard. Because if everybody wants to be quiet and you're the only one that wants to talk, what are you supposed to do about that?
But that's why it takes bravery, right? Mm-hmm. It takes bravery to be the one in the family to break the cycle. And I think that's a really hard thing to do.
Mm-hmm. Especially when no one has modeled for you how to do that. Especially when that's like, right? Like no one is doing that in the family. So you don't know how to do that, but you feel it. You feel like something has to change here. Mm-hmm. And yeah, that takes a lot of courage. To one, go out and find out how to do that and then bring it home and do it.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think of like the ways that people discourage those individuals who are brave. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, don't say nothing. Just leave it. Right. And how much it takes out of you to be like, well, am I betraying my family by speaking up? Or am I healing my family by speaking up? I think there's just so many generations that I've seen in my community in the past and even within my own family where I go, oh yeah, we're just going to be quiet about that. Even if every single person in this room is upset about it.
Yeah, you all know.
Yeah.
It's not like nobody knows, so we're trying to be quiet because like nobody knows. So we're trying to like just like save those few people that are in the dark. It's like all of us know. So why are we acting like we don't know?
Family secrets aren't secret.
No, yeah, for real.
Exactly. But there's this tradition of we're going to be passive about this. We're not going to confront it. And I don't know how helpful that is for our communities, right? This is like folding on so many issues, right? Like whether it's someone has depression in the family, whether someone has a substance misuse challenge or someone experienced death and people are not confronting that, right? Or a miscarriage or whatever it may be. I think it just causes isolation.
Well, I think it also exacerbates the problem. Sometimes if we had just talked about it that one time, it would be pow. It would be over. We would be able to like do what we need to make it more like something that person can, they can do it now. Like they feel supported. But because we decided to be quiet, it's so much bigger. The elephant got so big for no reason. It was a mouse and now it's an elephant. Mm.
And then also I'm like thinking about it this way, right? Maybe the other tradition is to have a single person in the family be the scapegoat. Mm. Oh, it's because of them. That's actually why we have this problem, because this person is that way. And I often do therapy with the people who are the scapegoats. Mm. And they're like, yeah, everybody in my family would say it's me is the problem. But if you look at it, I'm only reacting because they're doing this and they want me to be silent.
And I think that silence is lonely and isolating, and it also breeds shame. Because I think, like, you know, as a therapist, one of the major ways that we help people work through things is by bringing language to it. The cognitive process of putting words to your experience, of putting words to your emotions, can be so powerful because it helps you make sense of what you're feeling and what you're experiencing and what is happening. Mm. And we don't talk about it. We're not working through it. We're allowing the shame to just go deeper and deeper. We're feeling lonelier and lonelier, more and more isolated. And that is suffering. That is so painful to just like for me to sit here and think about. Like that is just awful.
Well, yeah, it's going to catch up to you, right? Like I've been thinking about this a lot, right? With the research that talks about it, what we don't process during the day will actually be a part of what we process at night. Ooh. That's why insomnia is a thing, right? It's really fascinating when you look at it. Those who avoid their emotions during the day and attempt to suppress have the worst time in the evening, because now there's nothing to distract you. There's no homework. There's no thing to clean. There's just that thing that you've suppressed all day long that is in your face.
Yeah, you kind of go forever.
Right.
Sometimes everything's going to be done and everything's going to be clean.
Right. And that's like, it just, as you were talking about all of this, right? That's, I think that happens in families. Right. I know we're talking about as an individual, but I think as families, we do not rest in that way. And that feels like really depressing to think about. Mm-hmm. That everyone are in that circle or in that space is doing the things while also recognizing that no one's going to talk about it. And feeling unrest as a family feels like torture.
And I think that we see this very often with clients, that they come from chaotic families. And when they are not experiencing chaos in their own life, when they're outside of that family, they don't know what to do. Something they have to create some kind of chaos for themselves because that is what is normal. That is what is comfortable. That is what they are, their nervous system is used to. And they think that that's what it needs to feel like all the time.
Yeah. That's why it's like, so what do? For when you rest, and how do you feel? Like, where I give this assignment and they're like, I couldn't do it, Bongo. I'm like, why? Let's be curious about that. Mm-hmm. And like, it just was crawling out of my skin to sit in silence, to not be productive. And that just makes me feel really sad, right? Like, I'm literally assigning them to just chill and just be quiet. And it comes with anxiety and unrest. How are you digesting this, Kiona?
You know, I'm trying really hard actually to listen to my body right now, so I'm trying to relax.
Well, that means there's something, right? There's something in there that's saying, uh-oh.
Yeah. Well, I think I'm just, it is hard.
Yeah. And you don't have to talk about it, but I think that's important in all of this. This is why we talk about it, to heal.
When I think me saying that it's hard isn't saying that I'm not doing it now, which is why I'm really happy that I let it be difficult, because it sucked. And I think for listeners, that's something that I think wouldn't, at least in general, like when I'm like, oh, that was, this is hard, it's junk, that doesn't mean that it wasn't worth the work to do it. And that I think we do ourselves and, well, we speak of tradition, our posterity and everybody, those units, disservice by not thinking about like that space, looking in that closet, taking that time, because the root of all these things were wonderful. That's why we had them. Traditions are supposed to be a genealogy of
knowledge
and of identity and self and all these things. And so it's okay if in the genealogy book and in the map, we see things that are hard. That's why we talk about them and we look at them, because it's not a one track thing. It's going to keep going and be consistent and be fluid. And so, being able to look at them and be a part of them and creation and in deciding on keeping them or whatever, like all of those things allow us to kind of do what I was doing, just like listen to my body. This is all good. All these things are happening still, or it's okay if I still do some of those things, and like to just let them be what they are. And then I can think about what to do later. I don't have to be productive right now.
Yeah. And then in terms of doing that, right, then you create your own tradition within that space. Because if we don't slow down to listen, to be with, then again, right, as stated earlier, we repeat without even knowing. And that feels like torture without an answer, actually, if you think about it. Mm-hmm. Repeating the same thing over and over, expecting a different result, as good old Uncle Albert Einstein said, right? But the truth is, it's like, it's maddening to want something so different, but to have your nervous system say, no, 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 we're doing this.
It's so human.
Mm-hmm.
Ooh.
It is.
And I guess, like, that's what I feel like I want to say is, like, if you find yourself doing this, you are doing a very good job of being human.
Yeah.
And that is okay.
Mm.
And if you want to do something different, you can. Will it be hard? But will it be worth it? Yeah. Like you're saying, Kiona. Will it be pain-free? No.
Mm-mm.
But will it set you up to be pain-free? I mean, we're never really pain-free, but will it reduce your suffering down the road?
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
Will the future you say, thank you for doing something different?
There it is.
Instead of doing something that we've done all these years and have suffered in a circular way. And so I guess the invitation is, like, reach out, right?
Yeah.
Even if you don't even have a clue, or even if you're not in big distress, if you're feeling like you're in a loop, I think that's, like, the beautiful thing about therapy. Like, you get to see it through someone else's eyes. You get to experience it in vivo, because you're talking about it rather than just suppressing it.
Mm-hmm.
like therapy is not just for those who are experiencing great distress. It's for those who want to understand themselves and these patterns. So that's my invitation.
Yeah.
Go to therapy.
Let's open that closet together.
Hmm. Yeah. And we might find some treasures, and we might find some things that should have been put away a long time ago or given away.